Hello and welcome to a special East Anglian Derby edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name's Andy Warren and myself and my usual partner in crime, Stuart Watson, went behind enemy lines this week to speak with our Norwich City counterparts, Paddy Davitt and Dave Freezer of the Eastern Daily Press and the Pinken ahead of this Sunday's clash at Carrow Road. So without further ado, here's over to Dave.
Hello and welcome to a special edition podcast ahead of this Sunday's East Anglian Derby at Carrow Road between Norwich City and Ipswich Town. Right, deep breath to introduce the guests for you. On my right hand side is the Eastern Daily Press and Norwich Evening News Chief Norwich City Correspondent Paddy Davitt, and to my left our colleagues from south of the border from the East Anglian Daily Times and Ipswich Star Stuart Watson and Andy Warren. Welcome to Norfolk, boys. Big game, of course, this Sunday, and let's go straight into to the matches at the weekend. A 0-0 with Burton.
Yes.
How was that received from the Ipswich faithful, Andy?
Not well, and the Ipswich faithful wasn't very big either. As the lowest crowd in 20 years, wasn't it, Stu? So it's almost a blessing, perhaps, that there were not that many people to watch it. But there were boos at the end. And it just wasn't very good, not good at all.
I mean, looking at Ipswich's form, it's not that bad, is it? You won two of the last nine, but they've only lost one of the last five, and that was to Wolves. So I mean, there's no shame in that, is there, Stu?
No, I mean, if we were chatting about this on the train journey up here, we're desperately trying to find a few positives to focus on going into this game, because Andy's right that the mood, I think, in general is pretty flat surrounding Ipswich at the moment. But you're right then, they've not lost that many games looking at the last few. And even that Wolves game, they lost 1-0 and put on a decent performance against, obviously, a Wolves side who are running away with it. Two clean sheets, not lost the last two. But I'll be honest, I'm still putting a bit of a gloss on what was a fairly dreadful performance against Burton. And I know, you know, Norwich drew 0-0 home against Burton earlier in the season. But It was the nature of the performance, really. It took them till 5 minutes before the end before they even produced a shot on target. Was one of the worst, if not their worst, performance of the season. And Mick McCarthy was honest enough to admit that. So not the best way to be going into this game.
Yeah, I mean, Norwich drew 0-0 at home and away against Burton as well. So they really do make it a nasty game, not attractive at all. Whereas we had a rather more enjoyable weekend in Derby, didn't
eventful,
we, Pad?
Dave.
Certainly eventful, yeah. A 1-1 draw at Pride Park. And I think you'd say that the Norwich squad and support are heading into Sunday with a fair bit of positivity, aren't they?
Yeah, 100% agree. I think buoyant, I would go as far as to say, because I'll be brutally honest, I didn't think there was going to be a lot down from at Derby. I think that's the longest current unbeaten run in the Championship. It was 11 games prior to kick-off, second in the table, really experienced streetwise squad. And Norwich obviously had the injury blow to Tom Tribal, key midfielder, ruled out pretty much for the rest of the season prior to the game, knee and ankle ligament issues. So it felt to me prior to the game that probably would be a little bit of a bridge too far. You know, as good as Norwich have been away from home, won 7 games, I think it is, away from home in the Championship. Better way than at home, to be brutally honest. But you just felt, and then particularly they went 1-0 down 12 minutes in, Matej Vidra, very nice finish, and the home crowd were up then, and you thought this is going to be tough. But maybe it's a measure of how far they've come this season. Really from that point onwards, Derby probably allowed them to get a foothold in the game because they sort of sat back, but Norwich really took it to them and were unlucky. And as you say, it was very bizarre. The penalties that wasn't, the goals that wasn't. But ultimately, when the dust settled, it's another point, and a point in really difficult circumstances. So yeah, I think contrast to what the boys have just said there, I think the mood music this side of the border is very positive ahead of Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it was arguably the best away performance of the season, despite the fact that they've won so many games. It was really quite impressive, and sealed by a penalty by James Maddison, 10th goal of the season. He just continues to impress, and of course he was the man that settled the derby at Portman Road, wasn't he? Just how important would you say he's been to Norwich this season?
Yeah, I'd say, well, this season massive, and we'll obviously get into Sunday's game a bit more detail later on, but he will be a key man again. I remember actually when myself and Michael Bailey popped down prior to the Portman Road game, and we did a few little bits of pieces with Stuart, and I remember saying then prior to that game, without wanting to sound like I know what I'm talking about there, I thought Maddison would be the key man going into that game at Portman Road, and obviously he did score that day, and he's continued. Yeah, I mean, clearly we know this side of the border that we're probably in the final throes of his Norwich career, because I don't see any scenario come the summer window where he's not heading to the Premier League and a really good level in the Premier League, because you look at it and he's 21 years of age, he scored his 10th championship goal of the season on Saturday. Yeah, outside the Premier League, he's probably as good as there is in terms of young English talent coming through, because he's now proven himself over a 7, 8, 9 month period in the Championship. And as a result, I'm afraid Norwich are probably going to lose him. But for decent money, we'll be talking club record fees, no doubt about it. So all that tells you that he has been absolutely pivotal to what Norwich have done in the good periods of the season, and will be, I think, going into Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Robbie Brady's the club record still, isn't he? What was potentially worth up to 13 yeah. million to Burnley not that long ago. So certainly should be getting more than that. I mean, he scored a really good goal at Portman Road to settle that game back in October. And Norwich went into that game in good form. They actually went up to 6 after that game, and Ipswich dropped to 11th. But pretty much since then, Ipswich have managed to stay above Norwich in the table. So we're going into Sunday level pegging, aren't we? Level on 41 points. There's only goal difference which is keeping Ipswich above them. So it's really well teed up, isn't it?
The mid-table classic, I think it is. Norwich nosedived after that game, didn't they? It all seemed so rosy when the Norwich players were walking off, but a proper... What was it, no win in, not 1 in 9 or something?
1 in 10 or 11, yeah.
Proper nosedive.
Yeah, they of course, they went to Arsenal 2 days later in the fourth round of the Carabao Cup, and they were 5 minutes from winning, and Eddie Nketiah, 18-year-old, makes his debut, comes on, scores twice, and from that point on, Norwich, I've got it here somewhere in front of me, they...
One win in 10, mate.
Yeah, it was 1 win in 10, that's right, yeah, and that you know, has left them below Ipswich pretty much the whole way. So from afar, it looks like, you know, Ipswich have managed to keep scoring goals. Garner and Waghorn seem to have been good signings. So, you know, is it fair, the amount of negativity that is around? Is it because of sort of boredom around Mick McCarthy's team almost?
There's the weight of history on that as well. It's a lot, they're going to be in the Championship for a 17th straight season next year. So it's not all kind of the here and now that's causing the negativity, but... The goals have dried up as well. Yeah. If we're honest, like the goals, what was it, 44 they've scored, but they've scored in terms of home goals, isn't it? Two in six at home, and this.
Yeah, the goals are drying up. They were level pegging with Wolves in terms of goals scored at one stage earlier in the season, and they've kind of, as Andy says, they've dried up big time over the Christmas period. Really, was quite damaging. You know, they were on the coattails of the top six right up until that point. I think back-to-back wins. Was it November?
Yeah,
November, December time. And there was a sense then that maybe, you know, they might be able to do what they did a couple of years ago and sneak into the playoffs. But yeah, the goals have dried up, and the home form's not been great of late. And all of that sort of negativity that was bubbling under the surface from last season has just kind of... The heat's been applied to the pot again, really, hasn't it, in the last couple of weeks? I mean, it's fine margins, isn't it? They won 2-0 at Sunderland, and then had they beaten Burton, you know, I think everyone would have been very much up for this one. But the nature of that 0-0 draw on Saturday, I mean, you mentioned there earlier about Burton are a tough team to play. They didn't come and park the bus. They looked a better footballing side than Ipswich, which was the more concerning thing. They played the better football. They had more possession, more shots. Ipswich just never got going. So it wasn't like it was someone had come and frustrated them, and Ipswich never found a way through. They never looked like finding a way through. So the only thing I would say is, you've touched upon it earlier, Paddy, is that Norwich have been better away from home. They're not scoring loads of goals. They seem to be perhaps better suited to going and nicking results away from home. Ipswich, I think, will be quite happy to be away from Portman Road at the moment because of all the atmosphere that surrounds it. So I think, you know, they'd probably be quite pleased, conversely, that they're up here for this fixture at the moment.
I mean, in terms of home form, Pad, last home game, Norwich won 1-0 against Borough, didn't they? And that seemed to sort of take a fair bit of pressure off the talking around the home form. So do you feel that the home worries are maybe part for the moment from after that result?
No, yeah, I think they've lessened a touch, yeah, because they have managed to find a way. I'm thinking beyond Borough, didn't they beat Millwall as well? I think they've had one or two decent results at home now.
2-1, they lost 2-1 to Sheffield United, but that came after they'd been beaten on penalties at Chelsea in midweek when Sheffield United didn't have a game.
Obviously held Chelsea as well in the cup at Carrow Road. So I think that's turned a touch, but home and away, and it was underlined again, you know, with Nelson Oliveira's, that's got to be the poorest penalty I've seen in a long time. So basically Carson almost dived past it on Saturday. Goals are a massive issue, and you talk about Middlesbrough there, Dave, and obviously Norwich got their noses in front. I mean, if we have a scenario where Ipswich get themselves ahead, then I think those fears would come to the surface again pretty rapidly on Sunday. That for me now, moving forward and on a broader point, is the next challenge for Farker. You know, defensively, he's got that nailed now for me. You know, that three across the back with Grant Hanley, he looks an absolute steal of a signing now. He's so strong, so imposing. And off him, Zimmerman and Closer, they look like they're enjoying playing in that trio. So I don't have any fears now. And behind them, of course, Angus Gunn, who's been excellent when called upon. So the base, the platform is there now. Can they embellish it and add a little bit more creativity in the final third? And until they do that, I think they're going to sort of still be around that sort of top 10 area. I think that's really what could, if we're talking about next season and beyond, that's really for me is the final sort of hurdle that Farker's got to clear now. He has to find a bit more creativity and a bit more clinical edge at the top end of the pitch. And if they do that, they showed again, if you're going to Derby and they're second in the table and they really feel that they're in the race for promotion, and Norwich were as good as them on Saturday, so for me that tells me they're definitely on the right track.
Looking at the Derby record overall then, April 2009 is the last time Town won a Derby. That's the last time they finished above Norwich when City, of course, were relegated to League One. Norwich have won six and drawn three of that last nine games. So clearly the Town fans have sort of voted with their feet, I suppose, on Saturday with that really low attendance there, that they've made clear their thoughts. Do you think the bad record against Norwich has contributed to that bad feeling overall, Eddie?
I think it adds to the feeling of Groundhog Day, doesn't it? There's just an ominous feeling for Ipswich heading into these Norwich games. Right. You almost feel like you're fighting a losing battle almost, because Norwich pop up with the big moments. Norwich pop up on the edge of the box. It always seems to be from the edge of the box, just sweeping the ball into the bottom corner. And it's just added to a feeling that nothing's changing at Ipswich for a long, long time.
Okay. It's just one factor of many, I think, is, you know, I said on Saturday that every year they seem to go out the FA Cup at the third round. Every year they seem to lose to Norwich. Every year, whenever they're picked on TV, that seems to be when they pick their worst performances as well. So Groundhog Day is the right term that Andy used. Nothing's changed. 17 years in the Championship. Too good to go down. I don't think under Mick McCarthy they'd ever get dragged into anything like that. But the gap to the top six is also seemingly looks a lot more vast than the points would suggest as well. And football in general has moved on, I think, in the last few years. Financially, you look at Wolves and what others are spending at the moment, and I think there's just a sense around Ipswich fans that they're kind of just getting left behind at the moment.
And also football also ran, aren't they, at times?
Mm. So does that mean Mick's time at Portman Road is coming to an end then? I mean, there's been a bit of talk around that. He's obviously had a bit of a fractious relationship with the fans and with the media, it seems, recently. Is it possible that he is in his final season?
Certainly possible. I think after this Norwich game, there's only really one question to be answered, and that's the future. The Ipswich aren't going up. They're not going down this season. I think the future is the big question left to answer. He's out of contract. There's some kind of provisional 2-year agreement there for a new one, but it doesn't seem clear whose decision that is. But it's going to be a talk between Marcus Evans and Mick McCarthy that decides that one, I think, rather than any other outside factors.
So in terms of the January transfer window, were it able to strengthen much? Has that added much to the squad?
No, and it was the usual sort of short-term sticking plasters in terms of the additions. Loan players and players on contracts till the end of the season, which kind of again added to this debate. Is it a few players left as well? People like Tommy Smith that have been at the club for 10 years. It felt like maybe it's a clearing of the decks for a new man to have a bit of freedom with the wage bill this summer. But we might all be putting two and two together and coming up with five here. I mean, we keep changing our minds every few weeks. I think a few weeks ago I would have said I was 99% sure that Mick McCarthy and Marcus Evans would shake hands at the end of the season. Thanks for everything, Mick, but we need something to freshen things up and re-inject a bit of hope and enthusiasm into a fairly apathetic fan base. And it is apathy rather than anger at the moment. I think people are just getting a bit bored of it all. But you know, Marcus Evans is a very patient owner, and Mick McCarthy will, you know, might be prepared to put up with a bit of stick, and in fact he might be motivated to prove a few people wrong, and he knows that Marcus would stick by him, unlike some of the trigger happy owners around and about. And and Marcus Evans similarly will see Mick as a fairly safe pair of hands if he's not prepared to invest more than £5-7 million a year, which he doesn't seem to be willing to do. Then Marcus is then Mick is a fairly sort of steady hand on the tiller, really. But the people that miss out in all of this is the fans. They're the ones that are left with sort of mediocrity, really. So that's kind of the vicious cycle that we're in at the moment, the balancing act that we're in, and it's very hard to know which direction they're going to go down.
Dave, can I just interject there? Can I just ask the lads, do you think that was a watershed almost, that, as you say, lows to home attendance since 98 at the weekend? Obviously, if that trend was to continue between now and the end of the season in terms of a pressure point applied to Evans, you know, that's not something that the media are distorting or you know, it's trying to manufacture an issue that isn't there. You know, if people are voting with their feet to that degree, you know, would you think that could be increasingly a massive factor between now and the end of the season?
Well, it's got to be. I think it's not all of a sudden the attendances are low. They've been low for some time. They've lost, 10,000 fans in a little over 10 years? It's 40% of the overall gate in 10 years. Any business should be hugely concerned if you're losing that level of your customer base in actually quite a short period of time.
Yeah, I think it's from when they came down from the Premier League in 2002? Crowds of 25,000 average league crowds, and we're now down to 16 or so, and the crowd at the weekend was 13,800 odd.
It was Burton as well, who brought just 150 away fans.
I think Norwich's lowest attendance of the season is also against Burton, isn't it, which was 24 or something.
Yeah, I mean, if we're comparing the two clubs either side of the border, obviously Norwich's attendances have kind of held okay, haven't they? Even going down to League One, you've not seen that drop. It's not been a drop overnight. I think that, you know, that's fair to say. It's been a slow bleed of fans over a period of time. You know, I think bar two seasons out of the 17, every year the average attendance has just dripped down to what it is now. There's been an acceleration of that over the last couple of years. They're losing on average sort of 1,000 season ticket holders a summer, and ultimately money talks, and I think that will, in answer to your question, Paddy, that will be front and centre of the owner's mind when he makes his decision.
And I think it's come as a lesson to inside and outside Carrow Road, to be honest, that Norwich fans have looked at Ipswich and thought, you know, we don't want the club to get into that situation. So obviously they're worried that, you know, a second season in the Championship could become more. I mean, I'm trying not to make this sound like Ipswich bad, Norwich good, but it's a little bit difficult with the way things are as we go into the game. And on the other hand, with Daniel Farker at Norwich, we've seen a huge transition starting last summer once Stuart Webber came in as sporting director, a huge change with the squad, staff, the whole club, really. And January was fairly productive from Norwich in that we're still kind of getting to know the changes that Daniel has made, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, wrote about it in the last day or two, we're all being told, well, media, fans, more importantly the media, but you've got to buy into this now. This is a long-term, completely bold, new type of strategy, new era, and long-term football don't tend to be compatible bedfellows. So, but the thing is, to answer your point, Dave, what they're seeing on the pitch now is giving those fans belief, you know, that the results are starting to filter through now where it matters, which is Saturday, Tuesday, 90 minutes, winning games, producing performances, developing young talent. You know, we've seen it. Madison, okay, he wasn't one who's come through the academy, but he was basically on the periphery under Alex Neil, the former manager. Not so under Farker. He is now the main man, one of the first names, if not the first name on the team sheet. Jamal Lewis, another plucked from relative obscurity. Nobody really thought he was anywhere near Norwich's first team at the start of this season, but had a knee problem that held back his development. But now coming through, 19 years of age, world at his feet in terms of his football development. I think there's a sense now that, yeah, things are beginning to move. But I would just sound a note of caution that the financial situation is still casting quite a large shadow. And at the end of the season is the final parachute payment, which is, you know, off the top of my head, you're talking a £25-30 million hole on the finances moving into the next financial year. The reality is, we're talking about Marcus Evans there, that there is an ownership debate at Norwich, because we all know Delia and her husband, the majority shareholders, aren't in the Abramovich type of class of super rich. Norwich's model is sustainability. It's we spend what we can afford and what we can generate. So if there's no more outside investment coming in terms of the ownership, then it'll have to be from player sales. And that's why, you know, we go back to Maddison's their most saleable asset. He will move on. And that's my fear, that everything feels positive and everything feels it's moving forward at the minute. But obviously, if the summer comes and they have to sell a Maddison, you're almost taking three steps back and you've got to go again. So there is that balancing act that they're trying to progress it again and rebuild, but with heavily weighed down with the financial pressures on the club. So it looks like they've been quite skillful in the first two transfer windows under Farker and Stuart Webber, the sporting director. But I think this summer we'll get a clear idea whether next season is going to be, yes, we can push for the promotion, or whether it's going to be another season of consistent but incremental gains, I think.
You mentioned Jamal Lewis. Thought he was really good second half, actually, Saturday, after a slightly shaky first half. Okay, boys, give me some positives on Ipswich. The key players, I mean, Waghorn and Garner seem like they've made a good impact, particularly for the amount of money that was spent on them. And Selina, the lad from Man City, is he decent?
Well, Selina, I think, has got a Derby Day hero written all over him.
I feel that as well,
He just looks like one. You saw him earlier in the season whip his shirt off at Burton.
Against Angus Gunn as well in goal, his Manchester City colleague.
Yeah, Manchester, you can see him doing that. Down at Carrow Road on Sunday, you can picture it in a way. Waghorn, worryingly, is 12 without a goal now, isn't he, Stu? But he's still contributing significantly. It's not, you know, he's not just in the side as a dead weight. He's contributing in a kind of withdrawn role behind Garner, who we're trying to look for positives, aren't we? I was about to say that Garner struggles against back threes, but that's not really the positive you're after.
Most strikers have against Norwich recently, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
We're talking that where the game could be won and lost tactically. I'm just looking, you know, hearing you say that you've kind of settled on the back three system with the wing backs. Yeah. Ipswich seem very much dyed in the wool 4-2-3-1 at the moment. They've dabbled with the back three at times and matching up opposition, but if he goes with the same formation, it would be the wide areas, you know, doubling up on the two wing backs, and Jonas Knudsen, of course, has had a bit of a say in derbies in recent years. So if they can get that would be Knudsen at left back and Selina potentially on the left wing. That would be an area if they could try and sort of overload down the right. I don't know if Pinto's back or who would be right wing back.
Yeah,
there,
that's an interesting one then. If Town feel that down the left flank they could be quite strong, because Pinto did have a knee injury, injured freak climbing out of his car. which had us running to the Rio Ferdinand. Was it? Did he drop the remote on his knee or whatever?
He was stretching to put his feet up in front of the telly and
bottle of tomato ketchup. Another player was it?
Cannizzaro is dropping aftershave on his foot before the World Cup. Yeah.
Richard Wright falling out of his loft.
They all made the cut, didn't they?
So, so he missed two games, but he was back on the bench Saturday. But he didn't get on because they've basically turned Harrison Reed into this kind of. Well, Farker actually drew a parallel, I don't think in terms of his ability, but like a Philip Lahm type character who started off his career in midfield but is clearly able to adapt and play in that more right wing-back role rather than right full-back. And he's been superb the last two or three games. You wouldn't have known that it was a square peg in a round hole. So from the Norwich part of that equation, that's an interesting one now for Sunday, because Pinto, with another week's training, you would think he would probably err on the side of putting Pinto back in, particularly if obviously Chilina is one of the main threats, and behind him Knudsen, who seems to relish playing Norwich. So yeah, I could see Pinto coming back in down there.
What I will say is there's no guarantee Selina will start, actually, because he was they won 2-0 at Sunderland in their last away game, and Mick swapped him out for Freddie Sears, who formerly a striker is now very much a left winger under Mick McCarthy, controversially. So he was seen as a safer option, a bit more of a grafter on the flanks for a tough away game at Sunderland, and he may make the same argument again going away from home against Norwich, that Sears will be a bit more of a defensive option than Selina. I don't think that would go down well with the fans at all, but it wouldn't completely shock me if he did that.
There are a few more options on the bench now, aren't there? There were times earlier in the season where the bench was a creche and made up of outcasts and young players, but there's Mustafa Carriol on there now, who he played 20 minutes of the weekend, and he gave something. He gave a spark, and you know he's keen to shoot. He likes shooting from all kinds of angles, so you never know.
Has Mick had to move away a little bit from youth? Because if I remember rightly, Flynn Downes played in the game at Portman Road, didn't he? But he's now on loan in League 2 or something?
He's at Luton now. Yeah. And Tristan Nydam as well. I think the Championship just caught up with some teenage lads who weren't expected to be anywhere near the first team in the summer. They brought in Emir Hughes and Tom Adeyemi, former Norwich guy, and they're both out injured. Like, Hughes is done for the season, and Adeyemi's just struggled with all kinds of issues along the way. So, you know, he had to go to Plan B there in midfield, and that was the kids. And I think the Championship just caught up with two young lads who weren't quite, you know, exceptionally talented players, both of them, but you know, it's a hard league playing much more experienced players than they were.
And just lastly on the Ipswich players, the goalkeeper Bartosz Bielkowski is somebody who was linked with, I think, Palace, wasn't he, in January? So hanging on to him presumably was a big thing for Town.
Yeah, massive. Two-time supporters player of the year, heavily linked to Crystal Palace. That was kind of the saga of the January transfer window, but he's still here. He's agreed a new 2-year contract. We were told that several weeks ago. He's still to see evidence of him actually signing it, but Mick assures us there's no problem there. But no, he's been arguably the Championship's best goalkeeper. McCarthy insists he has been. I mean, he's 18 months of superb form. I mean, if you looked at his highlights reel of saves, he made two more important ones in the second half. He's got an outside chance now of going to the World Cup with Poland. They came and watched him at the weekend. I guess that kind of tells you where Ipswich have been at as a club when their star man's been undoubtedly their goalkeeper over the last sort of 18 months to 2 years. But
he was very good, wasn't he, down here at Carr Road last season as well?
He was, yeah.
No, he's top class, Bart, and if you were sort of pushing for a star man, he would probably be the one at the moment in terms of you know, the contribution for, you know, being important to trying to go and keep a clean sheet at Carr Road on Sunday.
I mean, Madison is obviously Norwich's star man. We've spoken about him already, and really, we saw the first real sight of Mo Leitner on Saturday, didn't we? Former Borussia Dortmund, former Champions League finalist, former Germany under-21 captain. He's been brought in on loan for the rest of the season. He looked like he's got a lot of potential, but we've still not properly seen Onel Hernandez or Denis Shabani yet, have we? So, can you see them having an impact? I mean, of course, Leon McKenzie scored on his debut, and Denis Shabani did come on for the last 5 minutes at Derby on Saturday. Could you see any of them playing a major role in Sunday?
Well, certainly Leitner. Yeah, I don't think, particularly after a performance as well as the result that they turned in at Derby on Saturday, I don't think he would veer too far from that in terms of his starting lineup. You know, subject to any injuries or fitness concerns, as we've touched on earlier. Pinto maybe comes in for Harrison Reed, but now of the new lads who came in January, I think it's going to be Leitner. Certainly will start the game, and as you say, Dave, you kind of have to scratch your head how a guy who's, he's only 25 now, but how a guy who was basically, he played 15-16 games for 1860 Munich, and then bang, Jurgen Klopp when he was at Dortmund, will have a bit of him. He won the league title and the cup at Dortmund, and as you say, he played 7 or 8 times the season they got to the Champions League when they played Bayern Munich at Wembley, and he was on the bench that day, and yet he's now rocked up at Norwich on a 6-month loan because, you know, he's had, you know, a loan spell at Lazio. He's gone to Augsburg. He's not fitted in there. Apparently their style doesn't suit him. But he certainly seems to suit Farke's style. Very high-quality technician. And the two games we've seen, he's been excellent. Yeah. You know, he's a cut above the Championship, if we're brutally honest, and make the most of him while you can, I think. But Shrebeni, no, I don't see him starting. I mean, that's the interesting one now from a Norwich perspective, is that Nelson Oliveira, who didn't exactly endear himself to the Ipswich fans, did he, before the first game with some of his comments?
He then didn't play, did he? I think he stayed on the bench.
I remember him coming out for a warm-up. He was waving merrily to the Ipswich fans. I don't know if as Portuguese is probably better than his English, but he won't be doing any pre-match in the next few days, I don't think, because he needs to keep his head down. He's no goals in 10, as I said earlier, shocking penalty. And that's the debate now. Does Farke stick with him and play the guy into some sort of goal-scoring form, or do you pull him out of the firing line and say, go and have a breather, son, because, you know, it's clearly weighing on him. You can see he's a player with, in terms of goal-scoring. I mean, his work rate you can't argue with, but in terms of his output, and that's ultimately what strikers are judged on, he looks bereft of confidence. So that might be a dilemma, but I don't think Farker would dwell too deeply. I think for a game of this nature, you go with what you know, and I think Oliveira, and as much as we're talking about Chiellini, that from a Norwich, I know from a Norwich fan perspective, there's a one or two hoping that 0-10 becomes 1-2 in 11 come Sunday.
Absolutely, you can almost sort of smell that the goals are close, because he isn't. It's not like he's playing badly. He won the penalty. Both penalties came from Moritz Leitner passes, so you know he's shown what he's got. Although there was still a little bit of rust with Moritz, wasn't there? So it's going to be interesting. I think things are finally poised, and we can probably leave it there, gents. It's going to be an interesting Sunday lunchtime. There will of course be loads to get your teeth into on all of our websites. EADT, Ipswich Evening Star, Pinken.com is probably the best one to go for north of the border. And we'll leave predictions until later in the week once we know the team news, I think. I'm sure we'll be doing Facebook Live videos and things like that. And we'll see what Sunday brings. Right, thanks very much for joining us today, chaps. And we will catch up with the rest of you guys out there outside of the pod later in the week.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Remember, you can subscribe to Kings of Anglia on iTunes, through Spotify, and listen through Audioboom and through our websites. And make sure to check back to eadt.co.uk and ipswichstar.co.uk for all your build-up ahead of this weekend's East Anglian derby at Carrow Road.